Welcome to Podtendo, a Nintendo podcast, where they analyze, reminisce, and replay the glory of old Nintendo games.
The Disney Afternoon will return.
Hey guys, welcome to the Podtendo podcast, where we analyze, reminisce, and replay the glory of old Nintendo games. We can be contacted on Twitter at Podtendo Podcast, email us at podtendo@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Sometimes there's videos. If you commented there, maybe someone on this end would see it. That's pretty exciting. We're a review, let's play, pop culture-y retrospective show. So that's all the things I'm supposed to say. Fun. Cute.
Nice.
I'm your co-host, Mick, and I'm joined every episode by my lovely and talented co-host,
Tyson.
Hi, what's going on?
Well, you know, pretty good. And I guess not too much is going on. Just enjoying a nice little heat wave.
Yeah.
As I hope everybody else is enjoying and not suffering.
Yeah, hopefully that heat doesn't get you too bad. Global warming, it's real, apparently. So we feel it. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing like a crazy amount of heat swings.
Stupid. But on the plus side, you can hear both of our beautiful voices. Unlike Pokemon Snap, when you couldn't hear me. Man, that's annoying. And I hate to listen to that episode, and I'm sorry we put you through that, but boy, it happens, you know?
It happens. This is a free product. You pay for what you get.
It's true. If you give us money, maybe we'd try harder. We wouldn't try that much harder, but still, you could give us money. Anyways, without further ado, you clicked on the episode. You know what's coming at you. We got three games on the slate. We're looking at the Disney Afternoon Collection. It's kind of fun.
Awesome. I think, like, such a good time. So a lot of these games are, well, they came in that little bundle pack, and it just caught our eye. We're like, yeah, we got to talk about these games.
I have had this collection on my PlayStation 4 for a couple of years, because I used to have my PlayStation 4 downstairs. I moved it upstairs at some point, and I had it when I was in the basement. So, like, I'm thinking I had this for about three and a half, almost 4 years before we finally got around to it. Tyson's Law one day suggested it. It's not bad. We can talk about the vital stats, get into this game, and then we can, like, dive into, like, why we think you're in for a treat today. And if you see this around, I don't want to be, like, too transparent, but I say maybe buy it.
Yeah, add it to your wish list. Let's just say add it to your wish list, and if the end of this, you can either keep it on there or remove it, but it goes on sale constantly. So
yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, keep an eye on it, because, like, you might have found something here. Might have found something. So this game, so Disney Afternoon Collection, developed by Capcom. Sales are unknown. We don't know how many sales there were. I looked, nothing. It was released April 18, 2017. How long to beat has this at? 15 to 20 hours to complete all the games. Makes sense. Price of release was $29.99. If you factored inflation, it would be similar, so I didn't write that down. It's not on eBay because it's only a digital release, and eShop price, see above. It can be found on the Xbox One or PlayStation 4.
Like, this game, I like, we didn't really grow up with a lot of these games, but
we never had an NES.
Yeah, but we definitely grew up with the cartoons. It's nice to kind of go back and enjoy these games, and everybody knows Capcom. This is like Haida Capcom making just a nice little collection. Gotta appreciate that. Like, the licensing alone must have been expensive, so to know that you can get this game for, like, sometimes 50% off or 75% off, it is a steal of a deal.
Yeah. No, it's very, very nice. So as we said at the top of the show, we're going to do a review. So we're going to talk about the games. We're going to do a retrospective. So we're going to kind of look back and look at them in broad strokes. But at some point I said a pop culture show, because normally what we do is we travel back in time to dates and we do a Wayback Machine. And even in my notes, it says Wayback Machine, record scratch. We're doing a Disney Afternoon Battle Royale. So just a brief explanation. Disney Afternoon is DuckTales 1. DuckTales 2, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers 1 and 2, Tailspin, and Darkwing Duck. Specifically, we're going to be looking at three games today, Chip and Dale's 1, Darkwing Duck, and Tailspin. So we've actually already looked at DuckTales 1. Maybe we'll come back to DuckTales 2 at some point. I had a pretty good time with most of these games, so I'm sure that would be kind of a treat to play at some point. Anyways, we're going to look at those three games, and we're putting them in a battle royale. They're going to go head-to-head. We've got, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 categories. We're going to decide which of these cartoons is the greatest? You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm very excited.
Nice. All right, that's good. That's a good time. So, Battle Royale. Got some categories. First category, what do you think it's going to be? Obviously, it's Best Theme Song. Ready for this? Best Song. So, love me some YouTube copyright strikes. So, let's play some songs and listen to some annoying ads. So, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. Top of the docket. Number one game on the list. I think it came out first. So, what does that song sound like? Here is the theme for Chip and Dale's Rescue Ranger.
Keep music video while you text and watch uninterrupted. Try YouTube Premium on us.
That's pretty good.
No, it gets you jazzed, and it tells you everything you need to know. So.
Yeah, that's not bad. It's not bad. All right, so that's a strong contender, but can it compete with the banger that is the Tailspin theme? It's kind of got like a nice like island melody there. It's not bad. But our final contender, it's not bad either. Maybe it's awesome. Darkwing Duck's theme song. All right, so I'm going to leave this on Tyson's, there you go, Tyson's hands. What is the best theme song of those three?
This is tricky, because again, just my opinion, but yeah. Holy moly, these are three great songs. I lean one more to the others, and I remember this part pretty vividly. Chip and Dale, good, very, very poppy, but a little bit too kiddy. Tailspin is good, but it's not the best one of these. Like, if it was just on its own thing, it's very solid. But
honestly, I would just eliminate Tailspin right from the equation. I would just push it to the side and be like, you're not competing with these two kind of juggernaut songs.
Yeah. Essentially, it's between Chippendales and Darkwing Duck, but I gotta go Darkwing Duck. Like, I remember singing this as a kid, getting jazzed, just watch the show. Buy all the toys and play with that fire hazard that was the one bad guy, because we definitely had him as a kid.
Megavolt!
Yep, and we did not return him, because no way, we kept the original.
Just don't spark it on the carpet like an idiot.
Absolutely. Oh, especially all the shag carpets. Oh my goodness, all the fires. All
right, so there you go. So we got 1 point to Darkwing Duck, DW himself, the mask, the caped mallard. I don't know what his name, but there you go. So not bad, Mr. Darkwing. All right, how about number two category, longevity? So we've got Chippendales had 65 episodes, Tailspin had 65 episodes, and Darkwing Duck had 91 episodes. So does that mean the Caped Crusader goes up 2-0 in this contest?
I think he does, just because it's like, you know, way longer, and a lot of the episodes are just spectacular, so...
All right, well, this is interesting. Let's keep this going and see what happens. So we'll do Best Sidekick. Because that's really important. You know, you can't have a strong hero action adventure without a sidekick. So let's see what we got. So we got in Chip and Dale's, we got Monterey Jack. He's an adventurer. Gadget, she's a builder. And Zipper, he's a fly. In Tailspin, we got Kit Cloud Kicker. He wears a backwards hat, so you know he's cool. And I think he actually, like, skyboards, so pretty cool. And Rebecca Cunningham, she runs a business. All right. And then finally, in Darkwing Duck, we get Launchpad McQuack. He's a pilot. And Gosling Mallard. She's a little kid.
Ooh, this is tough. Because, I mean, I obviously want to give it to Darkwing Duck, just out of the bank, just like, because Launchpad and Goslin are just awesome. But Chip and Dale does give us three timeless characters. Monterey Jack's very, he's the strong brute and just runs headfirst and is always very emotional. And Gadget's the smart one. And Zipper's the fly. So, I mean, you kind of get a nice little smorgasbord there. Plus, it's Chip and Dale, and there's only Darkwing Duck. So, we're looking at five versus three. You kind of got to pick the numbers game here. And, I mean, Tailspin's fun, but I think Tailspin shines not in its sidekicks, but in its in other areas.
All right. Okay. And then let's jump to... Maybe I'll make it close. Best villains. Because really, you can't have an action adventure. You can't have a hero with a great foil, right? So we need the best of foils. So in Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers, Fat Cat, he's a mob boss. He is kind of the main man. Tailspin comes at you with Don Carnage. He's an air pilot, as well as Shere Kong, who's like a business tiger man. And he's kind of evil. And Darkwing Duck, we've got... Essentially, it boils down to the Fearsome Five. So you got Negaduck, Dr. Bushroot, the Liquidator, Megavolt, and Quackerjack.
See, and in Tailspin, there's also Ka. So, like, you get the whole Jungle Book villains, which is really cool. I don't think this is where Chip and Dale is the strongest, because Fat Cat's a mob boss, and he's one guy. And I never really liked the whole mob boss as a bad guy. Like, even, like, the Kingpin in the Spider-Man animated series, he was never my favorite villain. He was
always nothing to do with the fat shaming of cats that they're going for. You're very body positive, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just, like, it's just the mob boss mentality. A little bit not for me. Tailspin, like, I love the Jungle Book franchise. So that one's, like, it's a solid second, but Darkwing Duck's got to knock this out of the park. Like, it's essentially the Batman, like... His rogues gallery, but for Darkwing Duck, it's spectacular.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. So we'll do the next one, and then we'll talk. So I think we're at 3-1. Darkwing Duck, one category left. So I think Darkwing gets it. We'll see if Chip and Dale can keep it close. So cultural significance. Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers was nominated for 17 Daytime Emmy Awards and was voted the 60th best cartoon on some list that I was looking at. Tailspin, however, was voted the 81st best cartoon, and Darkwing Duck was voted as the 93rd best cartoon. So that means, if you just do the math, Chip and Dale's gets that second point, keeps it close. The award overall goes to Darkwing Duck with a 3-2 victory over Chip and Dale, and Tailspin was shut out, so it's too bad.
Yeah, it's good, but it definitely was my... It was my third in this.
Yeah, I went and watched after beating the games. I actually went and watched the best quote unquote episodes of each show. The Chip and Dale's one was kind of funny. It was Monterey Jack was trying to make cheese at this restaurant that these two burglars had broken into because they wanted to dig underneath to get to a bank. But his cheese was so delicious, the cops kept showing up. So these burglars ended up like running a daytime coffee shop for the cops, and at night the Chippendales Rescue Rangers would come in and make this delicious food for them to serve the next day. It was kind of fun. Darkwing Duck saw the Fearsome Five, so it was Negaduck, Dr. Bushroot, Liquidator, Megavolt, and Quackerjack all teaming up in a two-part episode to take down the Caped Crusader. And then Tailspin was like a stupid one about Blue trying to get his driving license.
Well, we know how the writing room kind of shook out, I guess.
All right, so that's it. So good job, Darkwing Duck. So, well, it's interesting, kind of how I think actually it would have went, kind of when I was writing these out. Not that I manipulated the results or anything like that, but glad they did that. I wonder if the games are going to hold up in that same order. Only time will tell.
I guess so.
Right, just dive into it, keep going. I got development details, first memories, and I think we're gonna dive right into our first game, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. So development details of just this whole collection. The modern port was developed by Digital Eclipse There was a growing fan interest after the release of the Mega Man Legacy Collection in August of 2015. Shortly afterwards, there was talks about what games should be added. They took the original ROM images and decompiled them so that they could re-execute the code into a virtual machine developed for modern systems. They recognized that these games were quite difficult, so they added save states and rewind features. Thank you, by the way.
Yes, thank you. Very, especially for one of these games.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have played it very much if there wasn't a rewind feature. So, first memories. I got nothing. I do hear calling something. Or I hear calling something about like DuckTales being a great game, and I know we went and played that a couple times actually before the podcast was even a thing, and then since the podcast has been a thing, we played it, which is awesome. But for these games, nothing, right? Nothing, and no. Other than it just sitting kind of as like a 500 megabyte file on my PS4 for the last couple of years, it's kind of my first experience diving into it, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah, definitely way more exposed to the cartoons and toy lines than we were in NES at this time. I guess we were just not at that age. I just didn't have a NES.
So, I mean, 89 was DuckTales, 90 was Rescue Rangers, and then it was Tailspin in 91. Well, in 91, we were like cognizant people, and we got a Super Nintendo, so we just never had an NES, right?
Yep, and we were probably just got these toys because they were finally kicking around and are, because that's the thing about living in Canada, you just got everything late. So that's why sometimes things were in 89 were like, yeah, I remember that vividly. It's like, but how?
Yeah.
But how? It's like, how do I remember any of these things? But like, oh yeah, Canada, right.
Well, we also grew up small backwater town. Like, I'm sure if we were in a bigger community or something, it would have been different, right? Like, could have had friends that had an NES. Well, I mean, if none of your friends had an NES, you weren't playing an NES, right? Like,
yeah, and I guess, like, for me, I remember, like, watching the cartoons, but we got way more exposed to the Disney afternoon with the Goof Troop and all that stuff.
Yeah, a little bit later, right? Yeah, Goof Troop. I heard that's a good one, too, actually, in Goof Troop. I definitely, again, don't want to be too transparent to play my cards, you know, early, but I had such a good experience when I went to EB Games for you the other day. I might have bought Aladdin and Lion King, so.
Nice.
The collection for the Switch. I'm like, yeah, I might like that. So, all right.
Nate, it's not a bad thing to have in the collection, because, I mean, let's face it, it's kind of nice to collect all these old retro games when they used to release them in collections, since apparently Nintendo doesn't want to give us all of them.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so let's move on to individual games. Now that we kind of have broad strokes, we know where the cartoons rank, we know kind of why this came about. Quarter into the podcast, let's talk about our first game. So we're going to talk about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. I believe it came out in 1990. Don't know the exact details because I did not write that kind of stuff down. This is the second Capcom-developed Disney game after 89's DuckTales. It was the least troublesome project to meet the family-friendly ethic standards, with very few changes made during development. The controls of this fine title, it feels like a Mega Man game. You move around with the directional pad, A jumps, and B performs actions. You can pick up boxes and rocks, you can throw them at enemies, or hide in them to protect you from oncoming attacks. There are several environmental interactions in this game, such as flipping switch to disable falling balls. 100 flower pickups will equal an extra life. 20 star pickups will also equal an extra life. Boss fights see you throw a rubber ball at the bosses and avoid their attacks.
Yeah, it's your pretty standard platformer, but with a simple little battle mechanic. It's functional. I think, you know, if you were a kid to play this, the controls aren't too hard to wrap your head around, and you can kind of cheese your way through it. It's not too hard at all.
No, not at all. Very manageable. All right, on to the story of this fun game. So the Rangers are sent to save a girl named they're sent to save a girl's named Mandy's kitten. So the girl's Mandy, she has a kitten. That, oof, man, all right. It turns out it was a trick, and Fat Cat used this to distract and kidnap Gadget. The boys must now face Fat Cat's minions to rescue their friend. All right, so there we go. So on to the level notes. So you are on I think there's an intro stage, and then you kind of actually are on a non-linear overworld, and you don't have to play all these stages. It's kind of ambitious for an NES game, to be perfectly honest with you. So the intro stage, you are outside an alley. You climb up on some telephone poles before advancing to the next stage. All right, okay.
Yeah, not too hard. I think you kind of get used to the like throwing of the box, because you can kind of throw it up, forward, you know, different directions, hide in it. It's, you know, sometimes the world less resistance. If everybody keeps running at you, sometimes you just got to hide in a box like Snake.
Yeah, that works very, very well. So now we can move to, I think we go down. We end up at stage A. So you climb a tree, avoid some enemies coming at you, I believe, on diagonals, and fight an owl. You know, that doesn't do anything for you about stage B. You're in a restaurant. You have to avoid some boiling water and fight a spaceship. So those are definitely one of the two ways of go. You can either go up to stage A or down to...
Yes, yes. And you know the classic enemy of a chipmunk, an owl, and a spaceship.
Yeah, like some of them are just like so far out there. I'm like, why was a spaceship the second enemy you fought in this game? Weird. It was very weird. I'm sure they won't get any more strange from here. So in stage C, you're in a library. You have to fight some tennis kangaroos. Very normal. And there is no boss. And you're like, great. But then on the stage D, there are a bunch of boxes in this area. Maybe it's a warehouse. There are some box enemies, rabbit enemies, and cocky birds. Oh yeah, that's the big buff guys that walk and they strut around. They're cocky birds. We first see the switches and steel ball segments here. And the boss here is a robot tank. So there we go. Normal enemies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's funny. That's a great name for that bird.
Cocky bird. Because he is. He's got like a strut. I was like, wow. I saw him. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Is this your area? I'll leave.
It's like, this is clearly his beach. I have offended him by coming into his area.
Fucking boss hogged me out of there. I was like, holy shit. All right, I'm sorry, dude. All right, my bad. Mm. On to stage E. So we're in a forest/garden. There's more box enemies, some bugs, and we have to fight a fish that shoots lightning at us. Just like the Pokemon Electross.
Did Pokemon steal from Chip and Dale?
I don't know if it's going to come up again, but maybe it does. Pokemon, we're watching you. Because in Stage F, we're in a vent section. There's some tough vertical platforming in this area. Oh, yeah, that's tough. Even with the Rewind Man, I was like, oh, my gosh. Really tough. Like, oh, I even said that. I don't know if you could do it without the Rewind feature. There's no bosses, though, but really tough. Like, that vertical section is just, oh. I don't know if you can avoid Stage F, but do it if you can, because Stage F sucks.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you were trying to play this back in the day, like, hopefully Nintendo Power has a map on this level, so you're not flying into darkness and making a wrong turn. And
well, it's just like the platforms kind of move out in like three or four segments and then like move back in, and the timing is very concerned. And then at some point you just have nowhere to go. Like, all of a sudden your platform's moving in, you can't run and jump to the other side because you don't have enough to grab like take their momentum and jump. You're stuck. I don't know what to do. Yeah. On stage G, though, we're in a casino. There are some tough guy rhinos, lizards, and attack bees. And there's a cat, or the boss here, is a cat that throws coins at you. Just like Meowth.
Look, we're looking right at you, Pokemon. I'm telling you.
Man. So at this point, though, however, we rescue Gadget. Hooray. She then gives us a rocket that we use to fly into outer space. And I was like, oh, cool, we're going to outer space. No, and then we just return to Earth, and there's like a new stretch of levels. And I was like, oh, that was a emotional roller coaster.
When did she have time to build that?
I don't know.
But she also, like, she was also, like, yeah, and leaves all the power-ups and upgrades hidden amongst the levels because she clearly just has a large supply of this stuff. And then just disperses it as they're, like, I'm assuming running with her over the shoulder, not looking back.
Yeah.
While she has time to do this. But
I guess. I mean, or if she just, like, focused all her energies on escaping rather than just being a damsel in distress, like, she could have easily got out. But because all of her energy is focused, like, hard set focused on doing all these things, she just couldn't possibly figure out how to escape. They probably even shut the door to the cage.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe she just wanted to like not hang around with them for a little bit, but also knew that she was like they're incompetent. She needs their help, so she's like, ugh. I'm trying to go on a vacation.
Yeah,
could be.
I don't know. Like, are they incompetent guys? Because like the episode I watched, they're kind of incompetent, and they just like kind of stop the crimes. But you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The lore of this game. Stage H, however, they're literally called Stage H. Like, it's a big H on this. It's not like I'm like just labeling them weird. Literally stage age. So we start off in the sewers. We fight some crabs. There's flying squirrel ninjas. And the reward is no boss. Hooray. Stage I, we're in a fan section. It's actually kind of neat because they blow you away and you have to like walk really slowly into them and then jump at the last section. There are some head nodding birds, robot mice, and we fight a caterpillar whose body falls apart and reassembles every time you hit him, so...
Yeah, I wonder, like, this is definitely a Capcom, like, stage. They were just like, can we just use this? Like, we didn't have a spot for this in that other game, but...
Listen, aren't there fan enemies in Mega Man 2? They blow in and... Yeah, and you need, like, the leaf shield. So, like, they kind of just took that mechanic, right? Like, you can kind of be like, I see. Yeah, so lots of Mega Man 1 and 2 elements in this game. But, like, I like that. I like that the fans kind of blew you and you couldn't move. And then you had to, like, slowly walk and then jump at the last section. And the platforming on the other side wasn't too difficult. So, it was kind of nice.
Yep.
Nice. On to Stage J, which is the final section of this game. We're in the end level with a bunch of conveyor belts. There are some rhinos, bees, weasels that shoot at us before we come face to face with the main bad himself, Fat Cat. He kind of throws coins at you and you just shoot your rubber ball at him. You throw it. If you can kind of get below him, you can cheese it. Like, I think I found a spot where I can just throw it up and his coins wouldn't hit me, which was nice. And then at the ending, we see the gang all posing in a picture and Tex tells us that we beat the game. Hooray!
Yeah, lol. Anticlimactic, but I think if this is let's say you're a parent and you'd like love Mega Man and you want to get your kids into Mega Man, this is an easier entry level, like, basically Mega Man thing. Like, there's no blast or anything, but the platforming similar. I mean, you're basically fighting robots the whole time, and I don't know, it just kind of gives me a really, like, kids first Mega Man vibe.
I can see that, and it's like a character they can reflect to. Like, oh, it's the guy I watch on TV, so then, like, they're more prone to go to that game and try and play it, right? So,
yeah, absolutely.
Because kids are smart. That's it. So that's our first game. Conclusions? Not bad. Not bad at all. On to our second game. He didn't get a single category. We'll see how Tailspin the game does. Development details. So there was little written about this game on Wikipedia. I guess you could say that after the success of DuckTales and Chippendales, Capcom was given various Disney titles to build games around. Cool. Controls. You fly a plane that can shoot down enemies. The directional pad moves you around the levels. Most are side-scrolling areas, but you can flip upside down and travel backwards in some of them. A shoots, B flips you upside down. After each level, you get points and you can upgrade your ship to handle better, shoot faster, and upgrade the damage you can take. There are also some bonus areas where your little bear friend, Skip Cloud Kicker or something, I don't remember what his name was, I'm not gonna look it up, collects balloons. So that's fun. The story is Blue must make deliveries, but the air pirates led by Darn Carnage try to stop him.
Yes, so very similar story to the TV show. But yeah. Cool that it's like an actual side-scrolling shooter, like Galaga or something. It's like, we haven't actually reviewed one of these games before on this channel, so not usually
a genre hell, that we shooter TV fighter. Yeah.
There's sometimes, like, the games we've played have like a mission or a side-scroll, a one part that has like a little blip of this, but. First time we've ever reviewed this kind of genre on this on our podcast / channel.
Cool. Yeah. So on to, I guess, the level notes. So we start out on level A, over the sea. You start out, over the sea. There's a waterfall you must cascade down, a shipwreck that you have to overcome, and the boss here is a submarine. Okay, all right. And then level 2, obviously, you're at the sea. There's a town. Where do you go next? The baseball stadium, of course. Just like the name says, we're in a baseball stadium. Guys throw balls at you. At one point, you're underground because there's like an explosion. And then you return to the surface and fight a giant baseball.
Was baseball a big part of the show?
I don't
know. The kid had a baseball cap on backwards, so did he throw a baseball or have a baseball bat or something?
If this is like a weird steampunk post-war, right? So I think it's supposed to be kind of Casablanca times, right? So like 40s, I could see baseball being a big part of it. So like maybe there is a baseball team that they cheer for or something like that. I don't specifically know the lore of this show enough, but based on some of the other areas we're going to, I don't know if they're all references to the show.
Be interesting to know. I wish I watched the whole series growing up so I just knew it, so I didn't have to do the research.
Smart. Level C, though, is in the stormy sky. So we move around some stormy clouds while avoiding parachute guys, sky mines, and torpedo sharks. The boss here are two planes. They're twin planes. Sometimes they go on either side of the screen and shoot you. Sometimes they come up together and you can shoot them. I mean, you can always shoot them. You can even shoot them when they're singles. And level D, the haunted house. So, oh no, a haunted house. Literally your friend Rebecca, whatever her name is, says that. She's like, I have bad news. Our next delivery is into a haunted house, Blue. So, pretty creepy, and it's big because you can fly your plane inside. There are haunted chandeliers, ghosts, and fire pits. The boss here is the Invisible Man.
Starting to get a little bit more difficult with the actual side-scrolling. Got to make sure that you don't run into things. So
yeah, repeatedly. Don't do it repeatedly.
Nope. That's why the rewind feature on the like collection is a great feature. Yeah. So again, just reiterating that point.
Okay, all right. It's not terrible. I'll get through this next one, and then I've got a little bit of an extra kind of write-up. So level E is high above the city. So we are above the rooftops while fighting off hang glider dudes, mini helicopters, and turrets. The boss here is impossible. It is a machine with a crane attached to it that throws balls at you, but you need to focus on destroying the crane first before shooting the machine diagonally. The first couple times I tried it, even with rewind, it just destroys you. Absolutely just destroys you.
Yeah. I feel like until you kind of memorize the levels, you just don't know what's coming. So yeah. it's a bullet hell shooter. So like, I mean, you just get wrecked. It's not like, oh, you have a large health bar where you can kind of just like shake your way through a level. It's like, no, you just get wrecked.
Yeah, you get like 3 health, maybe 4 if you upgrade or something like that, and they take a full health every time you get hit, so not a lot of room for error, although there are some health pickups if you're a little bit more high strung. So at this point, I was stuck on this crane, had a terrible time, and I accidentally restored my old save file, which took me back to level C, so in the stormy skies, and I was pretty much just ready to quit. I was like, I can't beat the crane. I don't want to replay the levels. But then I said, okay, one more chance. I played them really, really well. So like in the stormy skies, not bad. I almost played the haunted house without taking a hit. Like without rewinding. I just got into a freaking zone. And this game was a lot of fun. Like a lot of fun. Way more enjoyable going forward. And I was able to, I could see it as a kid just repeating this game. It doesn't move that fast, and as long as you can remember the buttons, like one shoot, one goes backwards, and you kind of give yourself space and time, it's not terrible. So onwards and upwards from here, I'm having a great time. On to level F, though, the mining tunnels. So you travel through a mine, fight off some minecart guys, snakes, and finally fight a machine that shoots rocks.
It's like the obligatory, you need like a underground level in every single game, but yeah, I'm glad you're having fun with this game, because bullet hell shooters are a very niche little genre that doesn't seem to get as much love as it should.
Yeah, true. Very, very, very true. On to level G. Jungle Junket? We travel through a jungle where guys throw spears at us, there's totem poles that shoot us, and the end fight is with a really easy alligator statue. And compared to that crane from that level, whatever it was, G or E, easy peasy. On to level H, and I was like, this game's just flying by. The final area, we're at the final, the snowy Alps, oh man, sees us on a mountain, where there are a lot of air pirates and planes that shoot/drop stuff at us. There are skiers that attack us as well. And then we fight Don Carnage. He's just a plane. He circles us. He avoids his attacks. Not that bad. And then the final boss is we take on the main Sky Pirate ship. And we need to destroy all the propellers to win.
These games, like, the bosses can only get so creative.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that they're fun to be short. Like, this game doesn't take you too long, even if you don't know what you're doing the first time around. Like, it only takes a couple hours maybe, and you're blinking you through it, and it's such an interesting little nest egg. Yeah. Because Disney didn't do anything like this before besides maybe a handful of levels and specific games, because I don't know, it's an interesting thing. I'd like to hear what other people think about side scrollers shooters, because they're quick. Do they work better as like individual levels, or do they work better as like full-on games, or is there like a happy medium in between?
I think, because it is like fairly generic with like level design, right? Like there's nothing super spectacular there, but the fact that it is one game built around the same mechanics, you do get used to it, and you can do more things where like look ahead, see obstacles coming at you, be able to shoot, avoid, evade, you know. Like I feel like the more you play it, if you give it a chance and you actually kind of get those skills, it makes the game a little bit more enjoyable. And like I feel like my second playthrough, after I made the mistake of hitting the save state wrong and like loading up my old file, I definitely was better at the game from those experiences, right? So like playing through it repeatedly, I think you learn kind of the little patterns and you get that little bit of a skill upgrade. And it's not bad. Not bad. So the ending here is Shere Khan shows up and says, "Curses!" We then brag about being the best pilot and we fly across the screen. The end.
Yeah, pretty short, sweet, and saved the day, delivered some packages.
Boop, 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 did it. All right, so Darkwing, you were the best cartoon according to our Battle Royale. Let's see if you're the best game. Can you take all the trophies home today? So Darkwing Duck came out in 1990. This game has very similar elements to Mega Man. You can select any of the first three levels. Once they are complete, the next three areas become available. It is said that this game is running on a tweaked Mega Man 5 engine. You begin with a standard gas gun, but can collect different types of gas through each stage. There's Thunder, Heavy, and Arrow. Each requires ammo, and each pickup replaces the previous type. You can change between special gas and standard gas by pressing select. The controls of this fine title: you jump and shoot. You can hang from some platforms and hooks to reach upper pathways. There are three upgraded. Why would I write down the air gas again? All right. And then there's three upgrades. Good stuff.
Yeah. Pretty easy, I guess. This one's a lot more like Mega Man because it even's running on the darn engine. But yeah, I think really, really tight here. It's the controls aren't as tight as like let's say DuckTales, but they're still pretty good.
Not bad. Yeah, no, they are a little finicky in there. Like you could tell, like it's just not as clean as I'd like it to be. So the story of this game is a crime wave has hit St. Canard City. Six of Darkwing's most dangerous foes must be defeated to save the day. But maybe it's seven, because if you do the math, it's 3 + 3 + 1. Game and notes, idiots. Level one, though, sees us fight Quackerjack at the construction site. So you move along a skitty city skyline in the background. There are hooks to grab, levers to pull to drop platforms. There we go. Most basic enemies and some semi-tough platforming. The boss here is Quackerjack. He runs back and forth on a three-tiered area. A little guy drops things on you constantly, so you have to continually to move, and Quackerjack will run away from you. The electric shock here will cheese him because it kind of shoots in a direction or like a diagonal. So you can just stand on the top and just shoot him a bunch. He dies. Or you can play like a game of cat and mouse and try and chase him and shoot him a bunch.
Very cool intro level. I'm glad we're starting at a very nighttime, you know, city-esque setting. Very Darkwing appropriate.
Oh, yeah, because I think that's, I mean, he has to be in the nighttime. Although lots of times he's in the day. In the cartoon, looks weird. I don't like it at all. However, maybe I do like level 2, Wolfman in the city center. So you travel along the streets, avoiding helicopter bombers, avoiding banana peels, and moving along tires so you don't hit spikes. There are some really tough, annoying turtle enemies, and the boss here is Wolfman. When the moon is out, he will throw boxes at you. You don't know if you can shoot him. But when it goes behind the clouds, he becomes a normal little guy and just runs around. This really feels like a Mega Man boss.
Yeah, and it's very cool that like he does transform and then you can just like lay into him. So it's neat. Like I like that it's like it teaching you learning patterns and not trying to just brute force it. So
nice.
It's a nice little level.
So the way we did this is I kind of worked from left to right because I think they're in terms of difficulty. So stage like 1 is easier than stage 2 is easier than stage 3. And then the next 4, they kind of jump up the difficulty too. Because level 3 starts getting a little bit tricky. We're fighting the Liquidator. He's a dog, water monster guy, and he's in the sewers. So there are egg bombers, green guys that use their capes as shields. And you kind of have to work on your timing to shoot them. Crows in the dark and tennis kangaroos. Hey, weren't they also in Chippendale Rescue Rangers? That's a reoccurring enemy. Capcom. I've noticed that. Is there a Pokemon also that plays tennis as a kangaroo? Probably. Yeah. There are some really hard-hitting platforms in this section, and I'm looking at you, Spike Platforms. Really, yeah. You really have to use your items in this area to survive. So if you have the heavy gas, you can kind of drop it below, which kills some of the kangaroos, which makes it easier. Otherwise, the difficulty in this stage is really, really up there. Some of the platforming is much more difficult. The boss here is Liquidator. He calls upon drops of water. You just kind of avoid them when they fly at you, and you attack him a bunch, and he dies.
Yeah, and you really kind of have to get the platforming, because there's a lot of times where you're like jumping along pipes to pipes to pipes to pipes to pipes.
Yeah, or like those little really platforms tricky. That go in the spikes, and like the spikes will be up top, so you have to drop below, and then you have to also climb back up and jump over them. It's tough.
Yeah, that was not easy. And that's when you kind of really notice that you're like, it's just not as responsive as like if it was DuckTales, I just feel.
Yeah, 100%. I was like, even like the Mega Man's, like I'm like, Mega Man does not control this terribly, and like you're just, it's almost like you don't know where. I found that with hooks sometimes I would jump at a hook and I wouldn't hit it, and I was like, where the fuck do I go? And I'd run around for a bit, and then I'd jump back on the hook, and then I would catch it, and I was like, oh, I was on like too far right, so the hook didn't catch.
Yeah,
so
you almost overshoot it, and you're like, it should just naturally catch. Yeah, there's something weird. They're just little intricacies that just makes it run not as smooth.
Yeah, not as clean as it could be. But after the first three stages, you get access to the next three. So on to stage four. So we're fighting Dr. Bushroot in the forest. There are some flowers on trees, dogs and houses that make this level very difficult off the start. You think the flowers, you shoot them, they're on these creeping vines on these trees. You shoot them and you're like, done. Well, then the head grows back and it shoots at you and you're like, what the fuck? You have to avoid some birds while platforming. And if you're really lucky, you'll unlock a bonus area. And you're like, psh, bonus area sounds great. Except when you go into the bonus area, you get sent back to the start of the game. So now you're almost at the end of the level. You've unlocked this bonus level on the super platform and you have to spend 2 minutes trying to like do the perfectly timed pixel jump so you don't hit it. It's awesome. It's awesome. Second half...
One time, like a bonus stage is hindrance.
I don't get it. I don't know. I'm like, why would I want to do that? Also, I played one of the bonus levels and I was in like a factory and there was pills and like launch pad was there, but like I didn't get anything. I don't know. It's not like I get upgrades in this game. Like, why would I want more money? Like Tailspin, I understand it because Tailspin is cool that there's an upgradable system and I want like the faster shooting gun or I want more armor on my vehicle. But why would I care about... I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like you need to like buy different ammo or anything.
It's not like there's like a best ending. You just do it, I guess, like, I'm like, oh, my score is better than yours.
Or extra lives, I think.
I suppose.
I think I got an extra live white once. But yeah, okay. You don't really like, I don't really get it. Sometimes like you flip a box and it's the right thing.
Yeah, I don't. Anyways, the second half of this forest that we're still in sees you, there's some waterfalls. And you're like, okay, cool. And they just like hide enemies. But then sometimes the waterfalls, like I think one of them, I fell down into another area. And that led me to the boss. So a little more conveyance would have been nice. But I guess that's a thing. And then the boss here is Dr. Bushroot. So you can hang from vines. As he jumps around, you shoot him. And after a few hits, his plant hand shows up and throws things at you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I don't really like the jumping around through the vines and platforming that way. It's just... It's not... I'm just not great at it, and it just like, yeah, not especially boss battles that have to involve tricky platforming while you're trying to just spam shooting.
So. Yeah, it's annoying. Very, very annoying. On to stage five, though, we get to fight Megavolt in the warehouse near the wharf. Stupid. We used to have a dock as a kid. I mean, okay, we grew up at a lake, and you're probably like, oh, that's great, except in the middle of the woods. Not as cool as it sounds. Maybe it's kind of cool. But people would call our dock a wharf, and I really hated that. So I hate the word wharf, FYI.
Yeah, it's a dock. It's like, a dock. But a wharf is in the middle of the lake. You're like, it's a wharf.
Stupid. What are you, fucking... middle-aged person like from transatlantic New York or something. Extra, extra, go to the wharf, that's where all the action happens. Stupid.
Yeah, exactly, like the 1950s call to give it up.
So there are some basic platforming, very standard enemies during the first section. Then you have to ride on some falling platforms, hooks, and fight karate squirrels, genies in bottles, and ducks on magic carpets. Yeah, I forgot about those genies and those magic carpets. That's strange. Megavolt. If you hang in the middle of the room, you can shoot him till he sends an electric shock in the air. And then you just jump out of the way. And then you jump back to the hook and you shoot him again. Kind of easy.
Yep. Yep. This is a good boss. I like him a lot.
But him also, and Bushroot like... are pretty good. Quackerjack wasn't terrible. Wolfman, left something to be desired. And like, Liquid. Okay, actually the bosses in this game really aren't that tough. So...
No, it's like this game was designed for children with the only real difficulty being sometimes the controls and platforms.
That's it. So on to level 6. Maybe the final area, if you're doing that. Remember, 6 plus 6, or 3 plus 3, gets us to 6. So I wonder what happens after this. So we get to molarity. Oh, I got it. In Industrial Tower, you have to move some levers to create some platforms while fighting basketball kangaroos. Oh, they don't play tennis anymore. They play basketball. Robotic dogs, some tricky platforming. There are some more turtles here. We didn't talk about the turtles last time. Ball ducks, the ones where you can only shoot them after they shoot you, and they bounce around. They're kind of annoying. And the turtles, they like throw their shells, and the timing is kind of tough to shoot them. Anyways, the boss here is Molarity. He has 3 turrets that take turns shooting at you. If you destroy one of them, he moves in to fix it and allows you to attack him. There's a gun here. Avoid the gunfire and you will win. That's kind of the whole game. So that's a good note, though.
Yeah. I mean, you generally don't want to go into the gunfire.
Yeah, you could be suicidal, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going for an aggressive strategy, but you know what? Why not stay alive and play the game?
It's not a terrible strategy. Not a terrible strategy at all. But now with all 6 intro levels, so 3 plus 3 is 6. Remember I said plus 1? We're going to that plus 1. The final area is now open, and it is Iron Beak himself. I don't really have a backstory of Iron Beak. He just apparently is the last guy in this game. So you move along a ship area while avoiding an onslaught of enemies. There are cannonball guys, mouse knights, green ducks with shields, and terminator ducks, which I kind of like, that become more vicious. Like, you kill them and then like their skin melts off, and then there's robots and they're like super tough at that point. Kind of neat. And the boss here is Iron Beak. This guy is really tough. He is in a control room above the ground. There are 3 hooks to get up to him, and there's 2 drones that fly around the room. The strategy is you kind of want to go to the left hook as the 2 drones respawn and destroy them. And you get into a pattern where you can shoot the control room and the drones at the same time, and then the drones will despawn. Iron Beak will go to the bottom, and then you can have a battle where basically you're just avoiding him throwing like safe doors at you while you attack. It's pretty easy, but getting to that point where you can destroy the drones and be on that leftmost hook, really freaking tough.
Yeah, it's a nice little way to cheese your way through it, and there's a couple bosses in this game where you just can cheese your way through them, and it's nice having that easy out, but it feels like that is literally the only strategy in the game. So it's like, was the rest of it intentional?
I don't know. Like, it was so difficult, I actually almost stopped. Like, I kind of saved or whatever and watched a video and saw a guy beat it, and I was like, oh, okay, interesting, because I don't know how you do it otherwise. It's too tough. It's not like you just like die and then jump back into a level and like the health, like the damage stacks. So anyways, now that it's over, Darkwing Duck saves the day, and as he drives away, he crashes his bike. Cool.
It's a great ending.
Yeah, it's a pretty good ending. Pretty good. All right. That's it. That's all the game. So current thoughts on these fun titles. So I said, what a solid collection of games. Chip 'n Dale's is an above average platformers. Tailspin is a pretty good bullet hell shooter. And Darkwing Duck is an enjoyable Mega Man clone. If I was to rank them, I would go Darkwing Duck number 3 due to its difficulty. And I don't think it's as clean as the other ones. Chip 'n Dale number 2. And I like Tailspin the best. So being able to upgrade your plane based on how well you did and be able to just control the side scrolling by going back and forth is actually kind of fun. It adds a lot of depth to this game. I didn't really see it coming when I first started playing it. I was like, oh, I'm gonna hate this game, and it stood out way above average compared to the other one. So Tyson, if you were to rank these games 1, 2, 3, how would you rank them?
I have a similar ish thing, except for I don't mind the difficulty too much in Darkwing Duck, especially given the like save states and rewinds. It makes it more manageable. Plus, I don't know, I feel like the nostalgia kind of just like washes over me, and I just get back into it. So I put that number 1, but Chip 'n Dale's is number 3, then I got Tailspin is 2, and then Darkwing Duck, because I enjoy myself a little bullet hell shooter. They're fun. They're like, I remember when Ikaruga first came out for the Xbox, or was it 360? I think it was the original Xbox. And you could switch between the different sides of your ship, where it was white or black, and you would absorb the different types of enemy projectiles. So sometimes you got to like flip back and forth, back and forth. And that was like, it was a lot of fun. So it kind of like brought me back to like that moment, but also it was a fun little game. It's not too hard. I think that like, It'd be nice if more of these games kind of got released because they're quick, they're easy, and yeah, there's not much to them. But I think with like proper upgrades and an interesting little world they create, it's a fun experience. I would love to have this game as a kid, and I thought that this for sure was going to be the weak spot for sure in the collection. Be like, okay, there's three good games and then Tailspin.
Yeah,
it's like no, that's not the case. There's like this is a solid collection with four good games. So.
What? Like, I'm almost tempted, and I would like to DuckTales 2 because we had such a solid experience with that game. Like, I would like to do that as a show, but I'm like, I kind of want to give Chip 'n Dale's Rescue Rangers 2, like, a chance as well. As well as, like, I told you, I already bought the Disney collection up, so I have, like, Aladdin and Lion King, because I've heard those are really good, and, like, Goof Troop. Like, I kind of, like, feel like we need to do them all at some point, so...
I'm more than willing to play all the Disney afternoon games and continue this trend. It's fun just playing some quick, easy games because a lot of these games aren't.
Yeah.
You can wrap one in an afternoon or whatever it is.
2 weeks to play an hour and a half of video games. That's perfect, right? Like spend half an hour writing notes, record for an hour. Like that's kind of what you want to do for a podcast, right? Like you don't want to make it more difficult than that. So.
Yeah, that's when we were trying to do that and with like 40-hour games, we were like, okay, when do I find time for living?
Well, you think of Secret of Mana. Secret of Mana, we were queued up in December to play that game. Yeah. And we didn't get around to it till March, right? So we gave ourselves like a 2-month buffer. So, yeah, but we'll need shorter games in the future. So, Chip 'n Dale 2, DuckTales 2, we're coming for you.
Yep, and Aladdin and...
Lion King, yeah.
Lion King should be excellent.
Goof Troop.
I mean, I know there's a Jungle King or Jungle Book in there as well.
Oh yeah, I think that's for like the Sega or something. I wonder if that's on like the Genesis collection.
Then there's also the Mickey Mouse and ones like
Castle of Illusion. Castle of Illusion. Games, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Disney did really well with their licensing. They obviously jumped on the right horse. Capcom was the right guy to make these games for them. So yeah. What's the other one? Goof Troop? Who do you think made Goof Troop?
I think it's Capcom as well, but like I know there's like a Goof Troop one that's more of like a co-op puzzle one, and then it's
that's not what we want.
I might be confusing it with the there might be a Mickey Mouse one that has Goofy in it that I'm confusing it. I can't picture the actual artwork, and that's usually how I remember everything.
Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion on the PS4. What? Full game. PS Plus members, Alt HD into the world of... What? I might be buying this game later. Castle of Illusion, Mickey Mouse, PS4. Huh.
Sold. Glad we reviewed this so we can discover more games to buy.
Yeah, Disney, Capcom, just take more of my money. I don't care.
Damn it. Oh, I mean, I think the other interesting one that we're definitely forgetting, only because it's timeless and classic, is the Bonkers.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's like but a weird like mini game collection though. It's like a solid.
Yeah, I'm really good to miss Bonkers. I was joking. It's like that's one of those games where like I remember owning that and being like, cool, it's Bonkers. I like this character.
I think I probably have it.
You get older, you're like,
yeah. I think I have it in like a box like 10 feet from me, and I'm like, nah, I do it.
No,
I can't do it. Awesome, nice. So obviously we like this game. We're talking about the next one. So good job, team. Hooray! What would you change? Would you change anything? I'm good. Rewind feature, excellent.
Yeah, no, this collection's solid. Like, on like just looking at it from a collection standpoint, like, if I'm going to go back and individually nitpick each game, I probably could. But as just a solid collection of four games, sometimes, like I said, this goes on sale for 75% off. So I think I grabbed this game for, like, $7. Like, this game was pennies for what you actually get. Like, four games for, like, less than $10 is bananas. And they're solid games. They're good to have in any collection. They're good to play. Like, I know a couple, they're not necessarily co-op, but they're fun to just like pick up and just casually play. It's nice to have these collections fill in the gaps of old Super Nintendo and NES collections. So you don't have to like sit on eBay looking for a decent copy that runs. Just buy these collections. They run on your HD TV, like you don't need to worry about CRT and all that shenanigans.
These games are really expensive, so I'm just looking up the listing on like eBay, and like I realize I usually do this off the top. I don't know why I didn't. I guess I could have done each individual game at the vital sections, but they're like $80. Like there's one, it was like $25 for Darkwing Duck, huh?
Yeah, and to know that like they just released these games for a whole.
Yeah.
Plethora. So if you want to play these games and you're not necessarily stuck on the collecting physical aspect, but you just want these games in some version in your collection. It's nice to have it on a modern console, pick up, play, and yeah, like the soundtrack of these are all spectacular. It reminds me of the beeps and boops are perfect.
Yeah, this is good. Interesting. You might be able to find like a lot or something like that that includes some of these games. Like, I wouldn't spend all that money on this.
No, and I'm sure sealed, like anything, sealed copies are obviously going to be worth a lot more, but loose copies are.
Oh, God, there was cheaper. A Darkwing Duck here. What was the first one that I kind of just didn't even like glossed over? Nope. Where's the one? Factory sealed, inbox. I think it's like one of those like graded ones. Darkwing Duck graded 9.0, inbox. Guy wants $5,500 for it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the crazy thing about that sealed stuff is old retro video games, because they just don't exist. There's maybe, what, like two or three of those sealed ones left. So that guy, he can ask that. Not necessarily saying anyone's buying that today, but
100%, yeah.
If that's the price he slapped on that, it's his price. Because, I mean, if there's no other alternatives.
Yeah.
You want that? That's the price it is.
It's how markets work. So, cool. Well, that is apparently what happens when you don't do eBay at the start. You have to talk about it at the end. Stupid Mick. Obviously, I was slacking when I wrote these notes. How about an Are You Buying It? And then we're kind of done reviewing this game, and we'll be done. So, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. I apparently have a fan theory for each one. So, our former Rescue Aid Society agents? That's the society from The Rescuer.
Right. They're definitely like some... I would say they're the American branch.
Yes.
Because
no,
I think
Bernard and the girl.
Ophelia. No, that's not the name.
Bernard and... We tried to watch the original Rescuers one day. It sucked. I got to the part where they're like flying down the coast and it's just awful.
No, the Rescuers Down Under is much better. Much better. Yeah. But the first one does establish that there is like... Bianca, yeah. Does establish that there is a different subsect, so we're onto something here. This could be a modern variation of that.
Okay, all right. How about Tailspin? So there was something about animals taking over the world. I found like a forum talking about how terrible this guy's YouTube video was and how stupid it was. And it was a stupid subject. So I was like, I'm not going to watch the video. And then finally, Darkwing Duck. So Negaduck is the evil side of Darkwing Duck, and at some point the good and evil were separated from the original duck to create Darkwing and the arch villain Negaduck.
I tend to buy it because there's lots of weird stuff that happens in the Darkwing Duck universe. Like the time where that lady gets a magic paintbrush and then they jump into all the different paintings. Like, I think there's a Picasso one. I swear I learned more about... I got exposed to more about art in that one episode than I did my entire, like, elementary and high school adventure. So, you know what? I'm gonna give something to Darkwing Duck. Could be.
I mean, that might actually be a real thing that happens, too. I don't know the exact lore. Life, the Negaverse, and everything. Because there was an episode I watched, and it was, like, the Fearsome Five all teamed up. Justice Ducks Part 2 and 1. They're on Disney Plus if you have a subscription. It's like 40 minutes. It's not terrible. Basically, Darkwing and some heroes team up against the bad guys. And it's a pretty good episode.
It's not bad at all.
I might watch. What's it called? Life, the Negaverse, and Everything. So, something maybe I'll watch at some point. I don't know. We'll see. Anyways, final, that's it. So that reviews our show. We've got a cultural significance, and then somehow we stretched out these couple episodes into an hour. Good job. A couple games into an hour. There you go. So you ready for this? Cultural significance. So in this section, we look at game tropes, marketing tactics, interesting stories. We talk about how this game relates, give other examples, and try and tie it all back together again. This is a pretty darn good collection. I would highly recommend it. And I'm not feeling too creative when I wrote the notes. So we're going to look at video game collections. I will state that the awful Mario 3D All-Stars won't make the list. I love those games, but the raw ports, without anything added to them, was not great. Thanks a lot.
Also, Nintendo. Limited release, that's no good. Mm-hmm. Bring them back, just leave them out. There's no reason to put things into a crate and be like, now you can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
It's bad. Stop that.
Stop it. All right, so there we go. So I started writing this list, and it was all, like, modern collections, and then I found out at the end when, like, the top one was, like, the Borderlands collection, and I was like, I don't think that's the best collection. So I went and got some retro ones. So let's see what happens. So number 10 is Super Mario All-Stars. Love Mario? Then you already know about these games.
Mm-hmm. That's a classic. I think that's the original. That's the OG.
Yeah, and this is something I haven't talked about, but I've been thinking about. I don't know what we want to do for Month of Mario this year, but I kind of feel like maybe doing, like, revisiting the Super Mario Brothers All-Stars might be a fun time instead of playing Mario Tennis.
I think if we do Mario All-Star Collections, we have three to choose from, right?
Well, I'd do the one that has, like, Super Mario World, Mario 3, 1, 2.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, there's that one's the easiest to do, and I mean, that gives us four games to play, and I mean, I'm always down to play Mario 3.
Okay. All right. Just a thought. Just food for thought. I don't know how we want to do it. If we want to do that this year, if any listeners listening, maybe we could do a double show and do that or something. I don't know. We'll figure something out. But if you're listening, Super Mario All-Stars, we technically looked at the games, but that was so early on. If you ever listened to our first episode, not great. Let's redo it. Let's make it better. Make it better. Just like the number 9 game on this list, Uncharted, the Nathan Drake Collection. So Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 for PlayStation 3/4. Yeah, these games are pretty good.
I've heard they're great.
Yeah, about number 8, if we don't want to say that. The Bioshock, the Collection. So Windows, Xbox, PS4, and Switch. And I love Infinity. The narrative in that game was super captivating. The other games, people still claim that Bioshock 1 is one of the coolest twists in all gaming. Awesome experience. Not a lot of love for Bioshock 2, but it's pretty good.
It is. I think actually all the games are really solid. Like, it's one of the franchises that I've never been disappointed playing any of the games. Like, one was very narrative and kind of like a fresh idea. Two just expanded on the world and gave us more guns and more action. Three was kind of a little bit more of a return to form of the first one. So, like, less action paced and more story, which, I mean, each to their own. And Infinite was its own thing, and that was really cool, and I enjoyed it. And I'm excited to see where they take it in the future, because I know it's not going to stay dead forever.
Nice. I was going to say, is there anyone coming out? But no. Okay, you're just teasing me. I hate it. But number 7 is the Sega Genesis Classics. So the amount of time I've spent in stores staring at this game, being like, $40? Should I buy it for $40? I actually probably could have just got a part-time job, worked, paid my taxes, and actually afforded it. So that's how long I've sat staring at this game behind glass.
Wow. That is a long time. This game, like, I mean, I love the Sega Genesis collections. Like, any of them really stand out to me. I got the one for the 360 back in the day, and that is just one of the best ones. Because I think that one still had... The problem with some of the Sega collections is they don't have Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles.
Yeah.
But that one did have it, so...
Yeah.
I think it even had the feature where you could select between them. Like, you could choose to, like, launch Sonic and Knuckles with Sonic 3. It was really cool. They actually integrated it really well. I was really impressed.
Yeah, that's one of those games, like, I don't have, and I always think, why did I not buy that? It was like $5 for all the Sega Genesis games on the Xbox 360, and I was like, maybe sometime I'll have an Xbox. But yeah, it's like the one, it's like kind of like a purple box. It's called the Mega Drive Classics or the Sega Genesis Classics or something like that. And I don't think they have Sonic 1 and 2 and Spinball. And that's where I always get, I'm like, oh no, they have Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Oh, okay.
But only in the Volume 3 edition.
Does that mean it's the Switch one? Because I'm assuming the Switch one probably came out.
Yeah. See, and I think that's where I get stuck. Like, again, I'm spending more time looking at it. Quit looking at it. Okay, moving on. Number 6. So this one I was actually going to cut out completely, but I kind of want to talk about it. So number 6 is the Assassin's Creed, the Ezio Collection for the PS4 or Xbox One. So I don't know about those individual games, but do yourself a favor and watch Assassin's Creed Timeline video on YouTube. The backstory and, like, lore that the Assassin's Creed games have is one of the best ever. Like, it's an absolutely incredible story. And it's one of those things, like, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, and I think the Assassin's Creed franchise is one of those things where it's, like, such a cool, rich unique universe to come out in, like, probably one of the most unique ones for a very, very long time. And it captured, like, a lot of people. Like, I remember where I was working in GameStop at the time, and even people telling me just, like, man, I love the first one. I just wish there was more to do. And, like, that's why I the second one's really cool, because there's so much to do, but I just love the universe of the first one. It's like, yeah, hopefully the third one will sort it. And they just kind of kept moving, progressing, and I get why they did it. Like, as a business standpoint, it makes sense. But, like, with the movie, they had a chance to just, like, let's nail this. And then they were like, absolutely not. Do not do any of that. Throw that out the window. Perfect.
Yeah.
Proceed.
So what is it? Do we have our Podtendo? We'll talk about this afterwards, but I kind of almost feel like we should just do, like, crappy, awful movies, and I feel like video game movies. I definitely feel like Assassin's Creed is making that list for SideQuest Cinema. But
it is going to make the top of that list, because that game is oof.
Maybe we don't need to torture ourselves. On to the top five, though, so that's pretty exciting. So number five is the Rare Replay for Xbox One. So one of the reasons I've almost considered buying an Xbox One, not to mention number four, which is the Halo, the Master Chief Collection for Xbox One. So the other reason I've almost considered buying an Xbox One.
When I bought my Xbox Ones, these were the first two collections I bought.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. They're pretty good. I'm extremely happy because the Rare Replay does the whole rewind and everything before everybody else.
And it's Banjo, right? You get Banjo, Kazooie, and Perfect Dark.
Banjo, Kazooie, Perfect Dark. You get Battletoads. There's a couple more in there. But yeah, it's like the entire just like plethora of their games, minus the Donkey Kong ones, I think, because they don't have, like, it's everything but Donkey Kong.
Gotcha, that makes sense.
So you think you can get Jet Force Gemini, I think it's tucked in there somewhere. And you're like, that game.
Okay, so what's an Xbox One cost me? Anyways, let's just talk about the last three, because we've been talking like 8 minutes, 9 minutes on this list. I mean, not this bad thing, but Castlevania 3 Anniversary Collection made number three on the list. They're really tough games, and I did spend money on this because I'm a masochist. Number two is the Contra Anniversary Collection. If you like Retro Running Gun, this is it. And then the number one game on this list obviously has to be the Mega Man Collection. They did such a good job with Capcom that it literally spun what we're talking about today, Disney Afternoon. And I think that that is culturally significant. So maybe someone needs to give some Mega Man Legacy Collection some love at some point. Wink.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's always the Mega Man Legacy 2.
Yeah. So. And then there's a Mega Man X Legacy Collection. There's lots of stuff going on out there, so.
Absolutely. There's lots of collections for some people to maybe dive into and tell you what they think of it.
Cool, yo. So that ends that cultural significance game wrapped up. We had a fun time. Boop, boop, boop. We probably both heard our audios. We do nice work today.
Yeah, I think we nailed it. I think I got to say James Bond.
That's all we got to do. And then we say goodbye. That's it. No, what's any items? Did we miss anything?
No, I think we're good. We're good.
Awesome. Okay. Well, see you guys in a couple weeks for Zelda. Maybe at some point over the summer, with the pandemic looking like it's wrapping up, me and Tyson might actually play a game together on the next episode. Isn't that scary?
Yeah, it'll be a heck of a long time since last time we did that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye, guys.
See you.